Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank, a.k.a. Moo, and Joan Adams, or Moonvine, and I host this show. Our guest this evening is Mr. 2020. He has a blog talk radio show as well called Vision Quest Radio, and this is how I came to know Mr. 2020. He has numerous websites, all with very unique names. We will post these in the chat room. But I just love this one, www.justkickass.com, www.2020unleashed.com, www.wayofthescout.com, www.nativeeyes.com. So, the call-in number this evening is 347-205-9200, and I wish to bring on Joan Adams.
And
hi, Joan.
Hello. This is exciting. I always love to hear 2020. He gets me all inspired again.
Oh, well, not that you're not inspired anyway, right?
I try to be.
Okay, well, here he is, I think.
Good.
Hello there.
Hi, how are you guys tonight?
Wonderful. Great to hear
you. How are
you?
I am fabulous. You know, I am excited to be here, and gosh, been wanting to get on the show for months, and I'm glad we could grab a time that worked out mutually. So, yeah, thank you both for having me on tonight.
Our pleasure. What have you been up to lately?
Wow, we are getting ready right now for one of our favorite events of the year. It's called Scout Camp. It's basically where we teach some Native American skills and philosophy for a weekend. And that is starting up on Friday and runs until Monday. So we are, you know, doing what we do the week before, which involves all sorts of good stuff. So getting ready for that. And besides that, like you mentioned, we're trying to take over the internet by putting up enough websites that you can't get away from us. So
by just kicking ass, right?
Absolutely. I was curious which ones that you'd want to mention on the show tonight, and it's like Dang, she's getting them all. You know, she's the whole gambit from Way of the Scot to just kicking ass. And one of our newest ones is mindhackvideos.com. And that one sort of came about by accident. I was shooting some videos for my year-long Remarkable training, and I thought, well, I'll put them up on YouTube because it's the best way to host video on the Internet as far as I can tell. And then we got the idea to put up a site about the darn things, and then we've probably made about 30 mind hacks since then, just basically exploring how people think is what the whole website's about. And we do it using I take pieces of meat wrapping paper and I hang them on the wall and I scribble on them. So it's a pretty cool website.
Oh,
wow. And what is that called again?
That is mindhackvideos.com. It's only been up for about 2 weeks.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Will you spell what you're saying? I still don't know what you're saying.
Sure. That's mindhackvi. Yep. Videos.com. Mindhackvideos.com.
Great.
Is that kind of a way to open your mind to start thinking, less rigidly?
I will guarantee that if you watch some of the videos that we have up there, and some are a little advanced, some are a little basic, but I will guarantee if you just bounce around and watch a couple of them, they will definitely change the way which you approach the world. I can just guarantee it.
Oh, well, definitely. We'll look at those.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
When I make a lens about the show, I'll put a bunch of those, maybe three of those up on the lens. That'll be
mm-hmm.
really fun for people to see those.
Mm-hmm.
Who may not have seen them, you know.
Right. Introduce.
And as well as making those little films, I bet just making them is just a truly inspirational kind of effort.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what's cool. Like, we started out doing the first ones. We did the first six on a fellow named Timothy Ferris. And Tim was the fellow who wrote the 4-Hour Workweek book. And in the Remarkable class that I'm doing this year, every month we're modeling somebody who's just really, really cool. And so what I did was, instead of doing what I usually do, which is giving them audio recordings and and we have a big handbook. It's about 150 pages at this point. What I decided to do, because of the way Tim Ferriss lives his life, I decided to make the videos about Tim. And it was just so much fun. Like I said, we couldn't help but toss up a site. And it really does explain to a degree some of what I do for a living. Because if you watch the videos, you can get, this is how this guy notices how a big part of what I do is I help people notice how they think.
Mm-hmm.
And the videos actually show the inside of my brain in action, which is pretty darn cool. And, if somebody has a request, I just, I toss up a piece of meat paper and whip out the marker and, Carol, puts the camera on the tripod and away we go.
Oh, that's great.
Wonderful. Sounds super.
It just kind of reminds me of a little film I made this week about my bullfrog. I got this idea that if I could capture a grasshopper, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this because you're the way that you look at the world with nature. So I captured a grasshopper and took it into the grasshopper. Now, the bullfrog is very, very tame, and he lives in our basement. And lately, he just sits up on the windowsill and looks around very slowly. He's very tame now, so that when Maquinda, my dog, came also bounding into the room, he didn't fly into his little pond or anything like that. And I threw the grasshopper, of course, escaped immediately. You know how they just don't do what you want them to do. And the grasshopper I know that the bullfrog will eventually get the grasshopper just because he's extremely intelligent. And it was just a really fun thing to do. It was just so much fun to hang out with the bullfrog and my dogs, and it was just a 2-minute film, but it was really, really inspirational, just so much fun and connected with the nature, spirit of the bullfrog. Very cool.
Well, now, Kate, now I've got to know absolutely you have to be the only person in the whole wide world that has made a video of a frog living in her basement.
Well, and also I put them on a postage stamp, and I'm trying to sell it through the U.S.
Really?
I love that, you know, because you can make postage stamps, and you can sell them through Zazzle. But the thing is, you put your photographs onto a postage stamp, and then it is put for submission through the U.S. Postal Service. It might take about 24 hours, and then usually they say okay with it. And then you can buy these stamps, get other people to buy them, and put them on special letters to send. You know for a fact that when you go to the U.S. Postal Service, you don't get anything that's very interesting anymore. They used to have much more interesting things.
Oh, yeah.
So now the bullfrog is on a postage stamp.
I love
stamp.
That. I think that's cool.
We have some people here. This is so cool. Just a minute here. Hello there.
I would love to get information on where to find your postage stamp. It's up on Zazzle, so keep me in the loop there.
Well, what I'm actually doing is making a lens about. It's so cool because you can put the postage stamp on the lens, and I can write a story about each thing, and I even put the video about the bullfrog up there, and then people would be able to click on a link that takes you right to the store.
Got it.
That's fun.
So then I will, send that link to you.
But
it should be up in the next few days. Yeah, it'll be up in the next few days.
Cool.
The bullfrog is beautiful. He is just magnificent.
Can I share a little story about something called a mud puppy with you?
Please.
Well, back when I was early 20s, my friend Tony had all these aquariums, and I was in this aquarium store, and they had this really unusual thing called a mud puppy. And this thing sort of looked like a tadpole, but it was about the size of my thumb, and it had all these weird sort of like gills coming out of his neck. Like they looked like little, sort of like dreadlocks coming out of his neck. And I thought, oh, this thing is so cool. I'm going to buy it for Tony. Well, I bought it for Tony, and Tony and I had one of those relationships where we were always buying gag gifts for each other. And so Tony looks at this thing, and it's about the thickness of my thumb and about 4 inches long. And Tony keeps it. He puts it in its own little aquarium, and the darn thing swims around, and it is just bizarre looking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, lo and behold, about 6 months later, I get my own apartment. And the first thing Tony gives me is this big fishbowl with a mud puppy in it. And so I've got this thing. It's about as thick as my thumb. It's got these weird-looking gills coming off of it. And it swims. Well, one day it starts to change. And this is way before the Internet. So you couldn't, like, Google mud puppy or anything like that. One day it starts to change, and it starts to grow legs and arms. And then it starts to get real thin behind its head, and the gills disappear. So then I have this thing called a mud puppy in this terrarium, and he was the coolest little thing. I used to buy him crickets, and I would feed him crickets, and he was my pet. And I wasn't allowed to have pets in the apartment except for something like fish. So he was my pet for about 6 months when I was there. And one day he died, and I had to bury him in the backyard. So I buried the little guy in the backyard. And this beautiful woman downstairs, she was like a foster grandma to me. She was so sad when I had to bury the mud puppy, but she didn't understand what it was. As far as I know, she always thought it was an actual dog. And I tried to explain to her what it was, and she's like, "Well, I'm really sad about your dog." But it was the cutest little story, and he was just the coolest little thing. If you get a chance to Google him, check him out. They're just the weirdest looking creatures, and it was a great friend for quite some time down there.
Makes you wonder whether there is some sort of relationship, karmically, reincarnationally, or what have you, with the mud puppy and a dog.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at the pictures. They're not beautiful.
They're different.
Very different.
Are you looking at one now, Joan?
Yeah, online.
Yeah.
Is it when he's in the water stage or when he's walking on land stage?
He's in the grass, yeah. Yeah, he's
okay,
on a
cool.
log. He looks like a giant lizard with a round face.
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
how big?
If you find anything about what they're like in water, take a look too. They're very different when they live in the water.
And how long did this little creature live?
I only had him for about 6 months, and I can't remember exactly how long Tony had him, but I think Tony may have had him for about 6 months as well. And he was just cool. Yeah, he used to eat the crickets out of my hand, and what was nice, all my life I've been blessed with pets and animals, and I think that was something which really, really it set the stage in my life for really appreciating life.
Yes.
I'm looking at him in the water. It almost changes his entire appearance, doesn't he?
Yes, absolutely. When they live in the water, they look totally different than they do on the land. It's just, it's wild.
Well, I think the bullfrog will live many years because, first of all, I live on the river, and if I did let him go, he would be picked up by a blue heron within a very short amount of time. And second of all, I know how intelligent this creature is because for a period of time, he jumped out of his pond that we have created for him with a little fountain, and he has a lot of little goldfish in there, and we feed him crickets and grasshoppers and worms and so forth. Well, he did jump out of there, and he disappeared, and he didn't get out into the outside world, but he did go into another part of the basement, and I guess we thought that was it. You know, we had lost our bullfrog, and we would never see him again because for some reason we must have thought he wasn't intelligent enough to get back to his pond. Well, within a 3-day period, he was back and just doing what he always does, which is basically communing and hanging out and waiting for a moth or something to fly by so he could. And they have great leaping powers. So he just found his way back, and there was no question that this guy knows his way around, and we don't really have to worry about almost anything about him except cleaning out his water every now and then and making sure he has something to eat. So he loves the dogs, but I really have to be careful about the one dog. And he loves us, and he reminds me of that owl I talked about in the first show with that great loving spirit,
mm-hmm.
totally
yes.
appreciative. Every time we give him something to eat, that loving look of appreciation is unmistakable. Totally.
You know, anybody who says that animals can't think or feel, I think has never spent time with them.
Yeah.
I tell Carol that, we are so blessed with our indoor kitties. We've got 8 indoor kitties and about 4 or 5 outdoor kitties right now that are pretty much ours. And it takes us literally like 13 cats. I mean, you know, the love that we get from these little dudes and doodettes is just, it's just so amazing. Yeah, they're all different.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, they're all so different. They're all so remarkable in their own way. And you can literally watch them think. You can watch them, plan different things. And it's truly, truly amazing.
They are the most intelligent creatures, that they say, of any animal. And you can see why. They're very independent. They communicate. They see the other world all the time. You can just watch them see the spiritual world.
Yes.
With those beautiful green eyes, usually green, sometimes blue. So amazing.
Well, I know you've heard me tell the tale that my stepmother would go out in the yard to feed the birds, and they would literally light on her arms.
Mm.
They knew that she loved them, and I've never seen that happen before or since, but they knew, I just think we don't.
She had that St. Francis thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think we don't know enough about them to know how to communicate, and so we miss out on what they could teach us. Maybe we're getting better about that.
I had an Indian elder share with me a story about the songbirds. And if you listen to what ornithologists, or I guess that's what you call a bird scientist or a bird doctor, I guess, I'm not real sure, but ornithologists say that birds sing because they're territorial. And the Native American elders say that birds sing because they have a song that needs sung. And so they literally, they space themselves out so that they're not all singing in the same place. But they space themselves out so the song can be heard over a wide area. And so it can be heard no matter where you are. And I really got to wonder if we honored birds by, instead of, you know, ever since we're little, we're sort of programmed with the birds are territorial kind of thing. But what if we honored them just by noticing that they're not territorial, but that they're more, they're each selecting their own little area to cover with the unique expression of love that only that they can give.
Oh, and also they seem to, if they are, separating out like that, they want to share that song with the likes of people like us, or just the whole world. Oh, that's a really great way of looking at it, isn't it? Oh my gosh, that really.
Carol and I, about 9 months out of the year, we listen to a robin, and he starts way down at the far end of the street, and it's before the sun rises, and he'll come up. He'll sing for about 2 or 3 minutes, then he'll come a little closer and he'll sing for about 2 or 3 minutes. And you can literally hear him moving up the street, you know, every single morning. And it is just the neatest song to be woken up to.
Yeah. Well,
are you in like a neighborhood so that there are people feeding him? Is that
I don't see many bird feeders except for ours in the neighborhood. But I think he actually comes down like the telephone line outside.
Ah. Well, last winter we had a wild turkey visit us during a snowstorm, and I have never seen one before. And it appeared.
Wow.
I also made him into a into a postage stamp too, because I think it would be a great happy Thanksgiving stamp. Anyway,
oh my gosh, yes.
This beautiful creature was—I was amazed because I thought my dog Ulysses, who does tend to be a little stickler with anything that moves, I thought he would be a little aggressive towards this bird. Well, she did not care about him, and believe it or not, he did completely ignored her. And I think because she's fairly fierce, you know, she wouldn't have had anything. But fierceness towards him if he got aggressive. Anyway, she just wandered around and came up on the porch, and you would think she was tame, but she really wasn't. And apparently they sleep up in the trees at night. And she came around for a few days, and I never saw her again. Not because I don't think she was killed or anything. I think because they wander, and they have a large territory. And I'm sort of looking forward to her coming back this winter. I think that would be so much fun. I'm sure she will come back. But that was a visitation of unbelievable proportions. We had so much fun with her. It's very, very special to have that kind of gift.
Yeah. Betty is asking, too. My sister's in the chat room, 20. And she's asking if you know anything about the mourning bird. It has such a sad song early, early in the morning, or is that an owl she's saying? Do you know?
Boy, I am not really sure. I don't know. Great question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also wondering, I was thinking about the alligators. We like to watch the alligators when we go down to the beach, and wondered what their intelligence level is.
You can only imagine.
Well, they hang around for hundreds of years. They can't be stupid, you know?
They have kind of a prehistoric look, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they've managed to survive through thick and through thin.
Yeah, for centuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't they have just experiment? Whoa. Do you all hear a ring?
Yeah, that was different. I'm curious if someone will answer.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
That might be a new Blog Talk Radio signal.
Maybe. It may be. So, 20, if I came to your camp thing this weekend, what would I be doing?
Wow, we've got four skills that we use throughout the weekend. We teach the people to come how to make fire literally by rubbing two sticks together. And that's sort of like what we begin with, because there's something really, really cool that happens if you learn that in a traditional setting. What tends to show up is not only an awareness of, I mean, you learn them how to make fire, but what really, really seems to happen when you get that is it teaches you something about caring for and managing the spark within. And I know some people, if they heard that, would say it sounds a little corny, but it's really, really cool, because I've seen about 85 to 90% of the people that I teach that to, you can see that they're visibly shaken when they get that. You know, some of these grown men even shed tears, which is just really, really amazing to me.
Wow.
So we begin with that, and again, it's just really cool. There's a whole creation story that goes with that. If you visit wayofthescout.com, there's a demonstration of me doing that on there. And I think you can even hear it in my voice, just the sacredness of literally taking that stored sunlight. The elders would call it, that this is so cool. The elders would call, when they referred to wood, they would talk about the sunlight that's stored within. And when you rub the sticks together that way, at wayofthescout.com, you know, literally, you're unleashing that sunlight that's stored within. And when you add wood to the fire, you're unleashing that stored sunlight within. And literally, another kind of metaphor that goes along with that is, you know, we all have something within that needs to be unleashed, that needs to be revealed. And that skill sort of helps people get that. Yeah, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to really get it, you know, through a skill that's very primal and yet very spiritual in nature, which is pretty cool.
Oh, I love that.
It's cool. Hey, if you're ever in the neighborhood, stop on by. I'm always willing to start a fire. We do that. We also teach what we call advanced awareness and invisible movement. And really what that's about, again, all these things have their cool, you know, on a survival side, you've got to be able to move silently with a lot of awareness in the woods. That way you can get dinner and you don't become dinner. On the more spiritual side, again, it's all about learning how to move in flow, how to literally be in that flow. So as you learn to move silently with awareness and respect, you can't help but open up to more flow in life. And then we toss a couple other bits in there, depending upon how the class is going. The fourth skill tends to vary a little bit, but those are the three that we always begin with. And again, they all have a spiritual side, and all have a very practical side as well. So it's pretty cool.
It sounds like a spiritual retreat.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've been so chicken for as many websites as we have on the internet. In some ways, I've been so chicken to promote it that way. And I was telling my one guy, Mike, who was here today. Mike's been a Tai Chi student of mine who's taken pretty much all my courses for like 15 years. And I was telling Mike, I'm finally getting ready to come out of the closet in a way. And he just giggles because he, you know, there's, you know, he sees me on the internet and he says, well, you let a lot more of you show than you think you do. So I'm just looking forward to even promoting it a little bit more as a spiritual retreat, because in a way that's really what it is. I mean, we do cover the primal side, the survival side, but it really is experienced as a very simple, grounded way to explore, you know, the world of spirit and the world of nature.
Well, and there is also so much power in just finding out that you have the ability to learn skills to survive. That's the real basic lesson that ties in with the spirituality too.
I think that's something that men in this culture really, really need. You know, we don't really have like a rite of passage into adulthood. And at the same time, you can watch grown men, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years old and so, and they're still trying to prove that they're men instead of actually accepting that they're men. And I think that there's something powerful when skills like this are explored, because I mean, you know, I know, you know, literally if crap hit the fan, I could start over. You know, if you gave me two sticks, we could have fire. If, you know, a little bit more, we could have food. It wouldn't take much. And I'm comfortable with that. I've lived primitively in the woods for up to 2 weeks at a time, just really honing my skills. So, yeah, I know that I could do that. And at the same time, there's also something that's a tremendous blessing. You know, whenever you explore life in that way, you honest to goodness get that God provides for you, that that everywhere around you there are divine blessings. And whatever you want to call God, you know, whether it be the spirit that moves through all things or, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. But whatever you call God, if you just look around, if you understand what's really around you, I can't take a walk without passing plants that I can use for food, medicine, or utilitarian purposes. I mean, everything I need is all around me. And that reminds me, if I have a day or two where I don't have any internet sales or my websites are down or whatever, you know, I can freak out or I can go, God provides. Yeah, I am provided for. And having that come home at that level of reality, knowing, okay, you know, I can make a fire out of anything that's around, well, not out of anything, but I know what to look for to make a fire. I know what to look for food or medicine. I'm provided for. I am just provided for.
We have everything that we need.
Yes.
But we don't know that.
Yes, and we do got to develop the skills maybe to use that. I mean, I look at the lenses that you guys make on Squidoo, and I've made some really crappy lenses myself. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I can't get Squidoo for some reason. But I look at the beauty that you guys share and the comprehensiveness that you put into those. And it is such a cool thing because you're taking what you're given and you're able to refine that, you know, literally like refining gold and share that with the world, which is so cool.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, that's neat. I hadn't thought about it that way, but.
Well, the lens making is a tremendous therapy because.
Mm-hmm.
So many times I just feel at a loss as to how to deal with certain things. And I sit down and make a lens, and I just feel 100% better.
Yeah, it's a creative.
But if the internet goes down, like you say, it's important to, or not. I mean, in other words, it's just good to get away from the computer and to get commune with the beauty of that is all around us, and it's so interesting what you're talking about are skills that people need to tune into to get off the grid, this oil grid that is so pervasive in our society, and people are in a state of denial about the reality of the fact that this consumer society and this running around with on tractors and using all of your appliances and so forth is maybe something that needs to be relinquished. What you're teaching is very important for that whole concept of getting off the grid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, for years, I mean, I did work with the Civil Air Patrol and Boy Scouts and stuff like that and a couple other organizations. And, you know, on a practical side, you know, I think everybody should have some water, some food, and a plan and stuff in case the power goes down. You know, and I think as a practical thing, that is very important. Two friends of mine, Todd Silva, Mr. Give, and Wendy Young, who I think you both know.
They've been on the show.
Yeah, I thought so. I wasn't sure. Those two were down in Houston when the hurricane hit down there. And from both of them, the stories that I got were, next time, I got three kinds of stories. One, I mean, both of them both said that they were provided for. What they needed showed up. It was, you know, there was divine perfection even in the tragedy. The second thing that I got from both of them was, you know, it might be wise again next time to have a little bit of preparation to make things go a little bit smoother. And the third thing, and this is the coolest part to me, was both of them talked you know, when Carol and I would talk with them, both of them mentioned a sense of community that came out of it. Neighbors got to know neighbors instead of watching reruns for the 25th time and everybody eating separately. Neighbors got to know neighbors. Neighbors started pulling their ice together to preserve their meat, and neighbors started cooking food in cycles in ways that that less food was wasted. And I thought, that's cool. And it's a shame that we needed it. That we needed a tragedy like that for neighbors to know neighbors. And community is a big thing with what Carol and I do here. And you know, when you think about that, you know, what would happen if my friend Ian has a great program that he does. At least once a week, they have screen free after 3. And what that means is after 3 o'clock, they don't have any screens on in the house, no TVs. No computers, and they were doing this, and they started it in the summertime, and it literally got the wife and him and the kids all out of the house, and it got them doing things instead of, you know, all looking at different screens at some different point in the house.
Ooh,
which I thought was a
game.
Oh yeah, yeah, gosh, yeah, there's a lens for y'all.
I love that idea totally.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend that was alarmed when her high school student came home, and she was asking her about what she had read so far in her life, you know, and she was listing off some of the classics, and the child said, "No, I hadn't read that." "You mean you hadn't been assigned that?" "No." She said, "That's it." She picked up the phone, canceled the table service immediately.
Wow. Yeah,
she
excellent.
Said, "We're through. No more. You will read this summer." And, you know,
wow.
I went over, she has 4 children, and I went over, and sure enough, 2 of them were reading. 1 of them had been out, little 10-year-old, had been out earning money, painting numbers on the street, you know, on the curb, street
mm-hmm.
numbers on the curb for people. I mean, they
right.
were, one was working a puzzle, but, you know, she said, it took us a week or two, but we got there, you know?
Mm, good.
Because we have gotten to that point in this society. We lost cable and TV connection one night a couple of weeks ago, and it was really funny because both of us were having trouble with it. You know, it's like, gosh, you know, what do you do if you're not going to sit in front of the TV and do something or compute? You know, it's a whole different, and I read a lot, but it's like you feel connected to the world when the TV is on. You know, you feel... It's quite an experience, and it was out like 8 hours. Yeah.
Oh, that's and I love the sound, the sound of quiet that comes about when there's no electricity. That is something else.
Oh yes, absolutely. You know, people don't realize how many humming noises are in their house. If you go downstairs and you pull the circuit breaker, if you pull the main circuit breaker, it's absolutely amazing how beautifully quiet it can get.
And we're so used to hearing it. I'm listening, as you said that, to the different buzzes in here. And we hear, we don't even hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget.
Years ago.
Go ahead.
Years ago, when I was doing a training, and I was in the woods for about 2 weeks with a group of people, and we were staying in this thing called a wiki-up, which is basically... you could just call it a real heavy teepee, you know, for like the woodlands area of the country. And there were no sharp angles in it. Basically, it was like a triangular, semi-rounded structure made of, made of like wood and debris, basically. And this is where we slept. And we were away from, all the buzzing noises. We were away from electricity. We were away from cars and so on for... I believe it was 2 weeks this one particular time. And I came back. I had a job in a nursing home back then. And I came back, and I went to work. I came in late Sunday night. I went to work Monday morning. And I found myself sitting at my desk. And I was sitting at my desk doing journaling for the restorative nursing department. And the ladies that I worked with, they looked at me, and they said, "What's wrong with you?" And I looked at them, and I didn't realize that I was that apparent. And I told them, I said, "You know, I'm offended by the buzzing noises and the right angles in this room." I could literally feel the right angles, and the buzzing noise was almost unbearable from being out in the woods for that long. And it's truly amazing because, yeah, I know today, I mean, if I went out to the woods for a week, next week, for example, it would still be as if I'd experienced it for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I can relate to that totally. And I think that getting back to a simpler life is actually the most practical thing that we can learn to do. And what you're what you're doing there is a tremendous gift.
I think it's so ironic because back in when I got hurt back in 1989 in the prison riot, I did three things. The first thing I did is became an alcoholic pretty much. That's what I needed to do to sleep. So I drank a lot of beer. And I'd tell my friends, if you're going to stop over, bring friends, which was code word for bring beer. So that was the first thing I did. The second two things I did, because that got old pretty quick, the second two things I did was I started seeking out elders to work with because I knew they could help me come back to my senses through the native wisdom and through working with nature. So I started seeking them out. And the third thing I did, I went on a road trip, and I ran into a buddy of mine who had me play this computer game with him called Leisure Suit Larry. And we never completed the game while I was there. I was there for about a week. And long story short, I came back, and I went to the state library. I was living near Harrisburg back then. And I checked out a stack of books about 3.5 feet tall. And they were basically on how to build and program computers. So I taught myself how to build computers, how to program them, and a couple different computer programming languages. And it was the most interesting thing because I look back at that, and there's the ironicness of my life. After I got hurt, I went into nature and Native American wisdom and also got heavy into technology. And it's 20 years later next month. It's 20 years later. Next month is my anniversary. And I'm still doing the same thing. I'm exploring this really interesting internet technology thing, all the while exploring still the native wisdom and the nature stuff, living as simply as possible when I'm not on the internet, basically. So it's a wild paradox in a way that just keeps showing up here.
Oh, yes. I agree. Well, the fact that you've been, I think that's what, personally, me doing this internet work and you too, Jen, I would assume that my life is very simple. I don't go out and shop. I don't really do much shopping online, and I'm just completely creating, always creating content on the internet. And then I go to work too. So it is a very simple life. You know, I don't like to really get involved with too much except for this political thing that I'm into too, but simplify. It's all a matter of simplification. It seems like what the world on the internet is more real and much more positive. The people that we meet on the internet, much more positive than
Absolutely.
What we are experiencing in the workaday world. So that's why I like the internet mostly. More than anything, that's why.
And
meeting
I'm
people
kind of
like you, meeting people like the two of you.
Absolutely.
But then on the other hand, it's a balance, and I firmly believe everything in life is a balance because I've gotten so I'm too much in here and I'm not enough outside, not enough in the world, and I don't go to work every day. So I have to balance that and create, in fact, for a while, I was putting on my list, go outside, until I got back in the habit of going outside. Now, my husband is on the golf course every day, so he's out among the beauty of nature all the time. But I just, I get up and I start to work, and the next thing you know, it'd be time to fix dinner, and the next thing you know, it's time for bed, and uh-oh, I forgot to go outside today. It's ridiculous. It's a stupid way to live. So there
balance,
is a balance.
Yeah.
There is a balance in that, and I agree with you. I adore my online friends, and I'm thankful because I think the people online that I associate with keep me on target, keep me more becoming the person I want to be, becoming the me that I want to become. where in the world, quote unquote world, they could care less who I become. You know, they're not. That's not where they are. It's a more material life out there. So,
material, yeah.
Yeah. I treasure my online friends who love me for what I say and write, or, you know, what I'm struggling with or whatever, and that's who I am. My identity has to do with more of my insides than it does my appearance or what I can purchase on any given day.
Yeah.
I think that's the beauty of the internet, because the tribe that you build around you, it's attracted to you without any geographic limitations.
Which
is so cool.
Yeah, think about that. That's pretty wild. That's very wild.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people just don't understand that whole thing, but.
But it's a very real thing. I mean, and we've talked about it on this show over and over again. But these online relationships are some of the strongest I've ever had in my life.
Yes.
And I think it's because we don't have time for pretense. You know, it's, you appear as you are. A whole lot less game playing to me.
Yeah.
And I've noticed the people that do play games or try to put up a facade, it just doesn't last.
Right.
And they don't last online very long either.
No,
the ones
not at
who
all.
The ones who think that it's some sort of power play, they just don't last. Have you all read the Attract Money Now book by Joe Vitale, the online book that he's given away?
I haven't had a chance to
pick
that up yet.
It's something that he's given away as an electronic book. And, of course, you have the option of buying it on Amazon. But the reason I bring it up is because of the way they are, not only can you read the book, and there's 7 principles as to how to break down your false beliefs about money, but then he and Craig Perron, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he and Craig also put out videos every few days to accentuate the learning of that book. And it's, he's not saying, he really makes it clear that he's not saying that you should go out and get a bunch of cars to put in a garage or to do what he has done, because everybody does things differently. But what he is accentuating is the, for once and for all, getting rid of poverty consciousness and to embrace the full joy of living. And when you get into a love state, you will have a flow and everything will come to you not everything, but the things that are meaningful will come to you without effort. And it's a great book. And the way they're dovetailing it with these great videos is, and the videos are just Joe Vitale standing in his house giving a little talk about the philosophy that's in the book and how you can look at things a little bit differently when it comes to money, which, when you go out, that's the main thing I see when I go out into the world is this incredible poverty consciousness. And I don't really think it's just because that's what I'm seeing, because it just seems like everybody's really worried about the economy and, they're just putting that out as being the only reality that there is, and you see it a lot. But online, we don't accentuate that at all with each other, and we barely even talk about it. So, very cool.
Yeah, it's not the focus online at all.
No.
Mm-mm.
It's a whole different consciousness.
You know, if you just do the numbers online, you know, I mean, you know, granted, there's a zillion websites out there and probably a zillion Squidoo lenses, so on and so forth. But if you, honest to goodness, if you write from the heart, there's a little formula that we follow here a lot. One, you want to be sharing something that people are interested in. And it's very simple to do. This has to do with having two eyes, and the first eye is interested. Just share something that, you know, people are interested in. And so that's the stuff, that's the data, let's say, or the objective part. And the second side of the coin is to be interesting, to share you in the process.
Oh.
And if you have both of those eyes, interested and interesting, you can't help but make money online. You can't help but impact people in a positive way and also get the karmic gifts that come with that. And it's a very simple formula. Share what people are interested in and share you, because you're interesting. Every single person I've met is interesting, and the key is just to encourage them to open up and share it, because everybody's got the coolest stories to share, and that makes all the difference.
Yes, you have to be yourself, and you have to not just be in it for yourself. You have to
Yes. You
have to be there for everyone, and you need to slow down enough to consider everybody's gifts, I think.
Yes.
I think that's the secret. And there is so, the community that we have gathered together online, including us here and everybody on Squidoo and everybody here and Milagro World, and it just seems like we have formed a tremendous bond that, as you said, it transcends geographical limitations. It actually transcends physical limitations, and it's almost like
Yes. A
spiritual experience, and it's in and of itself. I mean, okay, we're on the internet, and it's very technological, but what we have over these last few years, we have actually developed a strong foundation, and we really have offered ourselves to the world in a genuine way with a lot of integrity, and I just can't see that there's any way to mess with that.
You know, the really
Yes.
interesting thing about that, too, as you were speaking, I was thinking, I never heard either of your voices until we started Blog Talk Radio. So basically,
Oh, yeah.
We got to know each other without hearing voices, which is an important skill when you're in the quote-unquote real world. You know, you're looking at someone, you're hearing what they say. We don't have either one of those senses working for us online.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, the body, you're missing the body language online.
And the voice, the intonations, all that stuff. Yeah,
but, you know, if 75% of all communication is nonverbal, then I don't know if it's that important to be sitting in the same room with a person. I think it's more than 75%, really.
Is nonverbal?
Nonverbal communication.
Yes.
But then how
really,
is that happening online?
Yeah, I think online, you don't really need to be in the same room with a person or even in the same city or the same country with somebody to get what it is that they are feeling, what they're saying. You can feel what they're feeling without, think about long-distance healing. You know, you can heal, you can do a healing work, and I can do healing work here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania from somebody way out in Australia. So if that's the truth,
yes.
Then the other thing has to be true.
I get from the internet that this gives us an opportunity to realize how interconnected and how at one we are with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you can just read someone's words and get their essence without even talking to them or spoken with them, it just goes to show how at one we are, how we are all an expression of the divine, and how time and distance doesn't matter. There is no such thing as time and distance. That's just, we get that because our senses are so darn slow compared to reality. But when we get honest to goodness, oh, this is a cool person. I know where they're coming from.
Right.
And you get that beyond the words that they've communicated. It just goes to show we've got 7% coming through verbally. We've got 90-some% coming through nonverbally. But we've got far more coming in through the spirit that literally drives us all, the spirit that moves through all things. You know, we get that, just like with Edgar Casey and the way that he would heal. He would go into trance in Virginia Beach and instantly hook up with someone across the world. And if they weren't where they were supposed to be, oftentimes in his readings, he would go, they're not there. He'd just be quiet for 20 minutes, and then he'd go, okay, they've arrived. And then he'd give the reading. But if they weren't where they were supposed to be, he couldn't connect. It was just the coolest thing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Probably now, if he were alive, he'd be able to connect them no matter where they are.
Probably, absolutely. And how much do we do with each other without even realizing it? I had a dream the other night about, it included Joe and Craig, okay? Ironically, right, they would show up in the conversation here. But the dream included Joe and Craig, and I got up in the morning, and Lisa Coltman from the same crew had sent me an email about something. And I wrote back, and I just said, you know, really odd thing, I dreamt that I was down at your house, and Joe and Craig were in the dream, and I didn't give her any details, but just gave her a hug. And she wrote to me saying, hey, I found a pendant of yours. I'm gonna mail this to you. And it's like so cool. And we are so connected. We are so at one with each other. And the internet gives us the opportunity to explore that.
Yes, because we are meeting so many more people by doing what we're doing than we would if I just sort of went to work every day, came home or watched TV or didn't watch TV or whatever. And I wouldn't have any kind of avenue for what I write, because nothing that I write would ever be printed in the stupid newspaper that is in my town. Or, you know, it's impossible to get published in normal print stuff. So here we have, we created our own publication sites, and we can value what other people write and promote what other people do. And this is just a very exciting way to live, I think. And I wanted to also mention, you know, I'm not very far from where you live in the physical world here in Pennsylvania. You live near Pittsburgh, and I live here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I just think it would be, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to make an intention of coming up to see you and Carol. I really want to meet you and Carol in person. So I'm making this intention. I can't say exactly when, but I know it's going to be within the next year.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Cool.
I can see that. That will happen.
I can see it very clearly. Very clearly,
Mm-hmm. And see, and I have always said that eventually at some point, and we don't know at which point, we will all meet each other. And I believe that. Just believe it, and whether it's on this world at this time or what, but I believe I will meet the people that mean the most to me online. I just think that's going to happen.
Yes.
I do, and you know, it just, because the relationships are too important, all of them.
They are. Yes. Well, of course, we have met, and we are meeting in spirit all the time, but there is something about the physical dimension and meeting in reality, and it would be great to come to one of your retreats. That would be a good way to do it.
That would be cool.
How many times a year do you do your scout thing?
Up until this year, we've only done it once per year, and this year we've done it twice, and I'm thinking next year of potentially going up to three times a year for Scout, and then we do a bunch of other activities as well, peppered throughout the year, but I'm really thinking about taking that up to three times a year, because we're getting a following at this point where if someone misses a year, like before, if they missed, I'd have to wait a whole year. Versus if we're running it three times a year, it just really opens up the potential for so many more people to come and make it.
Yeah. Well, let me know the dates so I can plan, because I want to come.
Cool. I'll give you a warning. The food is fabulous. Carol takes care of, really takes care of us. We cook a lot of food on the fire, too, but Carol really, really takes care of us well. The yurts that we're staying in are really, really comfortable. I mean, you don't even know you're near the woods. I mean, it is just, I mean, you've got the woods on the outside, but it's the comforts of home on the inside. And the people that show up, the people are always extremely special. So there's the three things to be warned about.
No, to be honest with you, I don't care if I eat it or not. And I don't care if I sleep outside and look at the stars. So that's fine. That's great. But no, that sounds really great. We only have 29 seconds remaining on the program.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I just wanted to check in and say hi. I've been listening
off and on.
Hi, Sid. This is my sister, Sid.
Oh, hi, Sid. I thought it was Carol. Hi, Sid.
Hi.
Hi, Sid. How are you? I knew you were here, and I knew you were probably enjoying this very much.
Yeah, well, I was out doing some errands, listening on my cell phone, and then came home and got on my home phone. So,
thank you for showing up.
Yeah, well, it was fun and interesting conversation.
Good.
We always learn from Mr. 2020 for sure.
Oh yeah.
It's been a privilege to be here. Gosh, thank you guys so much.
It's been lovely to have you, and we have total gratitude for having you. So we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Hey, if any of the listeners want a gift, go to jumpingmouse.biz. That's JUMPINGMOUSE.biz. There's a awesome little book that we have up there, and you can order the physical book, but more importantly, if you want to start reading it, you can download the entire book for free there as well. Please go get that.
Yeah.
Jumpingmouse.biz, yes.
Okay, and I'm going to play some music here. Henrique Burke, no, actually, Klaus Jensen and Henrique Burke Abu from Denmark. Wonderful music, music for mother and child. So thank you, 2020. Give our love to Carol.
And, I will definitely.
And I will communicate soon. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye
thank
now.
You both.